Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Go to Cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up.
This week on Meat and Three, we're talking about the United States' biggest crop. It's corn.
They will always tell you that corn is like their family. Corn is their family. You treat corn like you would treat your family.
These subsidy programs are supposed to be for really dealing with unexpected things that happen to farmers. Although in practice, a lot of times, farmers are actually paid farm subsidies for things that we can control and do expect.
There's this constant warfare going on between the oil industry and the grain industry.
Tune in to Meat and Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, and welcome to the Feed Feed podcast. I'm Alexa Santos, a food editor at the Feed Feed, the world's largest crowdsourced food publication and social media community, serving as your daily source for what to cook, bake, eat, and drink. Throughout season four of the Feed Feed podcast, we will be trying to help you solve the daily question that we're all faced with, which is what's for dinner? Each week, we will be speaking with members of the hashtag Feed Feed community who are a constant source of ideas and inspiration and help us get dinner on the table every night. Today, I am joined by Tinger Shea, also known as @-of-ting on social media. Tinger is a foodie and travel expert, content creator, and blogger. She's also a digital advertising professional with her own consulting agency, Dash of Media. You can find Tinger on her blog, dashofting.com, and also on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Clubhouse. Welcome to the Feed Feed podcast, Tinger. I am so excited to have you here.
Thank you, Alexa. That was a really nice intro. Thank you.
Yes, a lot of good, easy to say good things about you, my friend. Well, Tinger, I know you are kind of like a travel and foodie expert. Let's take this all back to the beginning with kind of like food and family. I know you've kind of had a lifelong passion for food. So how did this all start? Like, what was your culinary upbringing? What was kind of the type of dishes that your family was cooking at home when you were little? What's that whole situation?
Well, first and foremost, I was born in Taiwan. I'm a Taiwanese American. And I think being Asian, food is such an integral part of our culture. It's just a way to like show love, affection when, you know, our culture really doesn't do those types of physical affections. So for us, like food is a huge communicator. So I've grown up eating all sorts of food. I'm not a picky eater. I like everything for the most part. And growing up, my mom was the person who cooked. My dad could probably make pancakes and popcorn, and that was pretty much it. So growing up, I was constantly in the kitchen with my mom. She was teaching me how to make dumplings. And then together, we would also make more American foods like pizza, which is probably one of my favorite foods because of that. It was just part of growing up. Like, it was really cool. Like, my mom would show us how to make dumplings, like how to make the inside, the filling. Growing up, I didn't like it so much. But now as an adult, I really appreciate that she showed me how to do those things. My dumpling skills, not so great.
Really? But, after all that?
Yeah, I know. One time my sister's then boyfriend was going to come and meet my family. And my mom's like, oh, please help me, like, you know, make dumplings. And I'm like, sure, mom. And so I was like folding them. And she's like, oh, no, this doesn't look good. She's like, just help mommy put in the filling and I'll do the rest. And I was like, wow.
Folding dumplings is really hard to get like the pleats. I've tried it a few times, like with other, you know, Chinese people like teaching me how to do it. And you have to be very dexterous with your hands to be able to get the pleats well. My friend who was trying to teach me how to do it said I was making them like pierogies. folded in half with no pleats, like so thick. So I get it. It's a little hard.
Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of skills. But, you know, with a lot of practice, eventually you'll get it. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't feel like it has to necessarily look perfect. It just has to taste delicious. And, you know, you can put some hot sauce and soy sauce and whatever sesame oil and all of those things make it look delicious and fabulous.
Yes. So dumplings, pizza, like that sounds like a really good variety of things. So when you came to the States, where was it that you were growing up? Like what part of the States were you in?
Sure. So from Taiwan, we went to Massachusetts. My dad was getting his PhD in chemistry at UMass. So we first started in Massachusetts. And then afterwards, we landed in New Jersey, and a very rural, small town of New Jersey where there's no Asian food. So we definitely had to like assimilate pretty quickly to eating more Americanized foods. But there was an Asian grocery store about an hour away in Morristown where my parents would get some Asian groceries. So we still had a lot of those foods that my parents grew up eating, but not everything until we moved to Los Angeles, where you have, you know, just a wide variety of cultures and different types of grocery stores where you have, foods that you can pick from all over the world.
Awesome. So are both of your parents Taiwanese then? Like what are some Taiwanese dishes that I guess they grew up with that maybe they did make for you at home outside of the dumplings and pizza?
In terms of Taiwanese cuisine, you know, we are famous for having beef noodle soup. It's basically you are putting beef in like a pressure cooker, then you're adding the noodles and you have to have like, you know, all the different spices for that. It's like one of my favorites. We had that once in a while, not as often. It was more about like sauteing a lot of vegetables with like garlic and sesame oils. And then also it wasn't until I moved to California that I got to try some of my mom's favorite dishes, which include shaved ice. Have you had that before?
Ooh, I don't think, yes, but not probably as good as what you're describing. I probably had some like ripoff versions. So what is it like? Describe it.
Yeah. So the Taiwanese shaved ice is basically like a condensed milk version of ice. And then they shave it down to what becomes a very fluffy snowflake like dessert. And then, And then they'll put sometimes more condensed ice on top. Sometimes they'll put mangoes. Sometimes they'll put like red beans, which you're thinking like, oh, is that going to taste good? But with a lot of sugar, everything tastes really good.
Oh, yeah. And with the condensed milk too, like yum.
And then sometimes they'll put boba, like basically whatever you want to put that tastes sweet, they'll add that in there. So I tried that for the first time when we moved to California or to Los Angeles. So that was a really great first time experience with my mom. She didn't make it at home. We actually went out to a Chinese restaurant to try it, and it was fun. She's like, let me show you one of my favorite desserts growing up, because you can't find that in New Jersey, or at least not where we grew up. So it was
that's
nice.
So cute. Yeah, that sounds delicious. Yeah, and I feel like once you relocated to Los Angeles, you kind of had that, like the world was your oyster as far as like tapping into some of those Asian cultures in a more kind of authentic way, just because of the population there. So that's really cool. And so what point of your life was it that you started taking on this kind of travel journey? I know you've been to like dozens of countries. And so what is kind of the deal with that?
Yeah, so growing up, I had an aunt who grew up in Brazil, and so she would always say, like, oh, you have to come to Brazil one day. It's great. We have soccer and all of these things. And then we also traveled to Canada because we were so close enough to the border that we could drive there. So I was always interested in travel. I used to watch National Geographic growing up, and it was not until I was late in my 20s I started traveling independently. And one of the main reasons why I did that was because I was coming off of like a really harsh breakup. And I was like, I need to get away. I need somewhere warm, tropical, you know, delicious food, a nice, fun party environment. And I remember growing up, my aunt, my Brazilian aunt Sophia, would be like, you got to come to Brazil. Like, Rio de Janeiro is like an amazing place. And so when I thought about the breakup and I thought about like, where should I go? I was like, you know what? I'm going to Rio. And I remember also watching that Snoop Dogg video, Beautiful, and with a combination of everything and, you know, Carnival. I was like, I got to go there. So I literally booked my flight and went down there. And one of my coworkers at the time, she's like, Dinger, you can't go by yourself. We don't know this place. Like, it might be dangerous. Like, I'm going to come with you. And I was like, okay, sure.
So, no more.
We ended up going down there together. And we ended up staying with a bunch of guys who were international students. And they had already been there for 6 months. So they knew the lay of the land of Rio. And they could speak Portuguese pretty fluently. And also they could speak English. So it was just such a fun experience. I'm like, I got to come back. As soon as I like went there, I came back, and within a couple days, I missed it so much. I booked another flight to go back in like another like month or 2 months. So,
oh my goodness. So that kind of like, did that kind of give you the travel bug and make you want to travel to all these places? That's kind of how it happened.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, I just had such a great experience meeting people from all over the world. It almost became like my new passion slash like addiction. I just couldn't get enough of it. And so every 6 months or even sooner, I would plan my next trip. And it was always somewhere like relatively like warm and tropical, like, or beachy. And so shortly afterwards, I was like, you know, one of the friends I had met in Rio, he was like, Tinger, I'm going to Thailand. You should come meet me. And I was like, okay, sure. So I went to go meet him at the best time. And on the way back, I saw a video talking about how beautiful, relaxing Bali was. And this was back in, oh gosh, like maybe 2009 by that time. And I was like, Bali, I was like, I couldn't even imagine what it would look like there. But the video on the airplane ride just made me so curious that when I came back, I'm like, I got to book my next trip there. So I went, and that just, you know, continued to snowball into going to like more countries and discovering different cultures and food.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, Bali in 2009, I feel like Bali became, you know, kind of a very trendy, you know, popular place to go probably in the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years. So you were really on the cutting edge of like the whole Bali, like,
oh yeah,
trend, I guess.
There were no Americans back then, like barely any Americans. It's mostly Australians, some Swedish kids, some kids from like Canada, and maybe Israel. And that was basically it. Like, you didn't see too many people from the U.S. there. So it was nice because you got to get away and not have to meet other Americans while you're traveling.
Yeah. And you were quite a trendsetter with that. So what are some of your, I guess, I'm sure it's hard to pick. It's probably like picking a favorite child, but out of everywhere you've traveled, you know, kind of looping in, you know, the travel and the food, like out of the places you've traveled, what were kind of some of your favorites or some highlights as far as culinary and travel experiences combined?
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite destinations for food is Morocco. If you love, yeah, the kind of the heavy but slight like savory types of food, Morocco is the place. And one of my favorite dishes from Morocco is like a lamb prune tagine. And before I was like, oh, lamb is kind of gamey, but lamb in Morocco, not gamey. It is delicious. It's tender. They put in dates, so it's like slightly sweet. They add in a little bit of cinnamon, cumin, paprika, all of those different spices that just complement each other. And then they add in like couscous, so you have like that heartiness from, you know, that delicious carb with the sauce. And oh my gosh, it was the place I went to like try tagine for the first time. Happened to be one of the best restaurants in all of Fez. And I only found out later through this booklet that it was. And it was one of those magical dinners where like it was on a rooftop. They had all of these small little plates called the meze plates and all these different dishes. And then after that, they brought out the tagine. And even after that, after I was really full, they brought out like bowls and bowls of fruit. And at that time, it was it was probably like around 9 or 10 o'clock at night. There was someone playing the harp. It must have been like 70 to 73 degrees with a slight wind. Like everything was perfect.
Just a fairy tale. A little dream.
Yeah. And if that doesn't appease you, you know, I was also very hungry. So, you know, there's a saying, they say hunger makes the best flavor. this is one of my favorite dinners I've ever had in a very, very long time.
Oh my God. Well, you're taking my breath away. That sounds so wonderful. Oh my goodness. So doing all this traveling and kind of learning and trying new cuisines, did that kind of affect your cooking style? Or tell me a little bit about kind of stuff that you've adapted based on what you've learned on all these travels from a culinary perspective.
Yeah, I think traveling really opened my eyes to like different flavors and just wanting to be more expansive in like trying something that I've never, you know, heard of before or seen before. Because at the end of the day, if the food looks good and you see people like really enjoying it, you're just like, you know, maybe I want to try that too. And so that definitely played a role into where my blog is now, Dash of Ting. So basically what ended up happening was I created Dash of Ting because I was on my own weight loss journey. I lost about 20 pounds in 2.5 months.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It was pretty quick.
Hopefully and a lot safely.
Yeah. No, definitely safely. And a big part of it was I wasn't carbo loading like I was before. And it was eating like relatively lower carb foods, like simple carbs. And that helped me drop a lot of weight and also gave me more energy and more steady energy. And so I didn't have to take naps as frequently as before. And I didn't have any like bowel issues that I was having before. So all of those things really helped. But part of the program in terms of like eating, you're thinking like, oh, eating low carbs, like, do I have to eat salad? Like, I don't want to be a rabbit, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I didn't want to eat like that either. And I'm like, you know, one of the things I miss the most about like having a more like restrictive dietary plan was not having like Mexican food, Chinese food, whatever foods I wanted. And so I thought like, okay, what if I create my own dishes that are relatively low carb, whether it's already existing or if I can make one quick substitute, like would that reduce my carb intake? Mm. So that's what I did. I miss my like fried rice. So I was already creating cauliflower fried rice before it became trendy. And I learned that from like this food group I was part of. Yeah. And then another instance is, you know, I love Mexican food, but I couldn't be eating like tacos so easily or burritos so easily. But what I could do is I could eat ceviche because that was relatively low carb, and I could have kebabs and all of those things that I didn't think of until I started writing down like what foods are relatively low carb. And so I created recipes for my blog for that because other people were curious, like, how did you lose weight? I want to do what you did. And that's what I was, that was what the blog was for. But you know,
interesting.
I don't know. Are you a big cook or do you usually go out to eat?
A little bit of both. I mean, I cook during the week and then on the weekends, I'm, you know, going out and having dinner and, you know, a bottle, you know, splitting a bottle of wine and, you know, having drinks is literally my favorite thing in the world to do. So it's, you know, it's definitely like a weekend treat thing for me. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I mean, what you're describing makes so much sense where if you kind of make a few easy tweaks that you can still do both. Cause I feel like that's kind of the hardest thing for people who, you know, are on sort of a weight loss journey or even just like a healthier diet journey. When you go out to restaurants, what do you do? Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's what you were answering was that question of, hey, you want to go to a Mexican restaurant? Try this or like fajitas without the tortillas or whatever it is that you're, you were kind of giving. And that seems like it was something that really kind of kickstarted your online presence, right?
Yes, exactly. So like you had mentioned, so people started asking me like, Tinger, I don't know how to cook. I don't want to cook. I don't have time to cook. What can I eat while I go out? So then I was making those suggestions and putting them on social media instead of my blog. And that's basically what started to catapult people's interest because, you know, people want things that are easy, convenient, but also delicious and hopefully healthy. That's always the goal. And so when I started posting that and I also, you know, posted recipes on the side, that's when I actually had friends start to take notice. And then one of my friends he's also a TV host. He's like, Dinger, why don't we start a YouTube channel together? And I was like, oh, that's a great idea. You know what? Since I worked in digital advertising, why don't you ask your agent if we can get on Taste Made? And so he's like, oh, they actually reached out to me. And so we started hosting shows together. And then eventually we hosted shows independently. So that was kind of the kickstart of like how I got into like hosting and how I catapulted my social media presence even further.
Goodness. Well, what a story. That seemed to all work out exactly how it was supposed to.
Yeah.
Everything kind of happened for a reason there. So tell me about, I know you have kind of a mix with your, I guess your blog is the cooking and also the, you know, going out to eat and the travel and the lifestyle, but for your actual cooking style, I guess, how would you describe it? Is it satisfying health food, or how would you describe the type of food that you prepare when you're, you know, at home, either for yourself or for friends or whoever you're cooking for?
Yeah, I want to say it's like healthier. It's delicious food with a healthy twist, because at the end of the day, no matter how healthy it is, if it doesn't taste good, nobody's going to eat it. So I just make small tweaks to make it like healthier, and healthier could be subjective. Usually it's a little bit more on the lower carb side, but it could also be like maybe you're reducing the amount of red meat you're intaking, or you're reducing the amount of like sodium, or maybe you're including some spices that are better for the body. So, you know, all of those things take into play of like the dishes I create, but most of the times it's lower carb.
Okay. And then as far as like cultural influences and what you prepare, you know, when you are cooking from home, is it, do you kind of lean on your family's background or your travels, or what are some of the Tinger staples as far as like cultural dishes, I guess?
Yeah. So a lot of the dishes I create definitely are from my background, you know, utilizing like soy sauce, chili sauces, any sauces that I grew up eating. Those are usually like my go-to. I'm comfortable using those types of seasoning. But, you know, because of my travel and because sometimes I don't want to eat Asian foods all the time, I do create other dishes. Sometimes I look on Instagram at my friends' pages. Sometimes I look on like the feed or other websites. Sometimes I look at like my favorite YouTubers to see what they're cooking and try to recreate that. And other times it could be like, I went to a restaurant, I really like this dish, and I remember all the different flavors and try to recreate something similar to that.
Interesting. Yeah. So it's a pretty eclectic, like you probably wouldn't put yourself in a box of, you know, one or two different types of cuisines. It sounds like you're doing a lot of different stuff all the time, which is, in my opinion, the way to go, because variety is the spice of life. And I personally, I don't know if you're the same way. I'm not a huge leftover gal, and, you know, not my proudest trait, but I feel like once I've had something, you know, if I've eaten, you know, tacos or, you know, Mexican food one night, I don't want that the next night. I want something different. So I feel like it's good to have that variety.
Yeah, I think when it comes to leftovers, so growing up, my parents were like, don't waste food. There's hungry people out there. And so for me, I'm very cognizant of that, but very similar to you. Like sometimes I get bored of eating the same thing like back to back. So what I'll often do is sometimes I'll take that dish and I'll recreate a new dish altogether. I think fried rice is an easy way to do that. If you have leftover meats, boom, make fried rice, put it all together, and then you have a completely different dish. And then other times, like what I'll do is if I have leftovers, especially from restaurants, not so much my own cooking, but from restaurants, I'll find like the closest, you know, area where I see a lot of homeless people. Unfortunately, there's quite a bit in Venice where I live. And so I'll just drop it off, because like a lot of the places I go to, they're really nice restaurants and it's really delicious food. But I already know like maybe it's too carb heavy for me, or like I'm going out of town and I hate wasting food. So I prefer to give it to someone who I know is most likely going to eat it or is hungry enough to want to eat it.
Yeah, definitely. And let me clarify, just because I don't like leftovers does not mean someone in my household is not eating said food. I'm just not the big leftover eater. It gets eaten, don't you worry, but not always by me. Amazing. So when you're making dinner each night, I guess how many days a week are you cooking, Tinger?
Oh gosh, it depends. If I'm traveling, no days. If I if I'm home, I try to at least cook at least once a day, if not, like, at least, let's say, 5 times a week.
Okay.
At least 5 meals in a week, minimum.
That's a good amount. That's a pretty good amount. So when you're making dinner for yourself each night, how do you kind of approach that? You know, what's for dinner? What does Tinger do? Are you looking at what's seasonal? Are you, what's the process?
You know, maybe it's very cliche to say, but sometimes I just listen to my body. If I feel like, you know, I don't want to eat a lot of heavy meats, then I'll lean a little bit more like veggie forward. I'm not a vegan or vegetarian by any means. I love my meat, but it just depends on what mood I'm in. If I want something light, then maybe I'll make like a soup, or if it's cold outside, I'll make a soup or roasted veggies. Like right now it's been much colder, so I'm cooking more like roasted Japanese pumpkin and like sweet potatoes and soups. And then during the summertime, I will make maybe like a fruit salad, or I'll make other like grilled veggies. So it's somewhat seasonal, but also I need to make dishes for myself only that's very, very easy to make. And like, you know, either I can pop it in the air fryer, which is my favorite, or saute it, that, you know, saute something that like doesn't take more than like 5-10 minutes. That would be my go-to ideal meal. But if I'm cooking for someone, oh, I could be in the kitchen for like 1 to 2 hours, no problem. Like I love it. But the thing is, I cook for compliments. Maybe that's like,
oh my
really
God. Cooking for compliments, TM, trademark that. That is
That's how I grew up. My mom would cook food and then she'd be like, which one is your favorite? Are you sure you like that one? I'm like, Mom, I like this one. So like every time she cooks for me, I have to pick at least one dish that like I rant and rave about. Otherwise, I know she won't be happy. So I feel like inherently I've inherited that trait. So now I cook for compliments. So if you compliment me, I will feed you all day long. You will be my best friend.
Okay. Well, now I know what I need to do to get some Tinger food in my life. Well, just shower you with compliments. That's really funny you say that, because my family makes fun of me because when I cook for them and, you know, they're eating and we're sitting down, I always say, do you love it? Do you love it? Not just like, what do you think? Do you like it? What, any thoughts? I'm just like, do you love it? Tell me you love it. Tell me.
Yeah. So we're one and the same.
Yes, I totally get that. Oh my God, that's amazing. Well, real quick, Tinger, we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors.
My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Wisconsin cheese has proven time and time again to be a delicious expression of craft, hard work, and tradition. As a Cheeselandian, I am able to share a Gouda experience with fellow cheese and food lovers nationwide, as well as connect with cheese producers and cheesemongers, taking my love of cheese to another level. I invite you to join Cheeselandia because during these difficult times, it has been even more important to take it easy and get cheesy. The Cheeselandia community and events have been the glue helping to keep us together and connected, and I would love it if you would join me. And let's face it, if you hear the word cheese and get a little hungry, then you've found a place you can call home. To find out more about Cheeselandia, go to cheeselandia.com.
So we talked about how you approach dinner every night, which all makes perfect sense. Now, tell me about some ingredients that you always have on hand in your kitchen.
Oh, I mean, I always have soy sauce. I always have sea salt. I always have sriracha as well, or like the chili paste. Those are my go-tos. I also have, let's see, what else do I have? In terms of, is it only sauces or just
anything like produce? Like what's in Tinger's kitchen all the time?
Garlic. I always have garlic. I don't understand people who don't like garlic. Like I always have to have garlic.
Especially you have to have fresh garlic. You can't do like the pre-minced jarred stuff. You have to do fresh garlic.
No. Does it count if you have it like pre-peeled or is that cheating?
I think that's fine. No. I've thought about that too myself. Don't you worry. I've gotten it pre-peeled from the grocery store before and I've thought the same thing, but I'm like, it still has all the flavor. It's just a little bit easier. That's fine.
Yeah.
Because the pre-mint stuff is not as flavorful. It just doesn't have it. So pre-peeled, we're good with.
So.
passes the test.
And I want to say I probably always have like onions in my house. I usually have ginger in my house as well. I usually also have shirataki noodles. Have you heard of it? It's a low carb noodle.
No. Oh, are they like rice noodles? What are they?
No, they can mimic kind of like rice noodle depending on what the mix is. So shirataki noodles is a Japanese noodle made out of konjac, which is a Japanese yam, and it's low carb. It's kind of the consistency of a very firm jello and like a regular like noodle or pasta. And depending on
is it like did you said konjac? I know what konnyaku is. Is that different than that?
I'm not sure what that one is. Konjac is K-O-N-J-A-C. It's the Japanese yam. And yeah, it's low carb. So like each packet usually that you can get at the Asian grocery store, but also like Whole Foods or any like mainstream grocery store and near the tofu section. Each package is usually like 10 to 20 calories and like less than 1 gram of carbs. So
what?
I love it as a noodle substitute.
And does it kind of mimic, like, do you feel like you're missing anything with it or no?
I think it's a good enough substitute depending on the brand. Some brands are a little bit better than others. But no, I mean, the thing is, I love noodles and I love pasta, but I yes. don't like feeling bloated afterwards. So, mm-hmm. you know, I have to listen to my body. And so I eat shirataki noodles as a substitute so I don't feel lethargic afterwards and I don't feel bloated. If I didn't feel any of those things, girl, I would be eating it. I don't care about the weight part.
No, I totally get that. Like eating, like, you know, sitting down and eating a bowl of pasta is like you're locking in. Like that's a commitment. Yeah. That's a choice. Yeah. That's not like a passive thing to do. Like you are making that conscious choice to feel that way. It's always worth it, but not every day. So that's a great idea. I'm going to look into that. It sounds like a good, because I'm kind of, you know, I'm putting myself on blast again. Like I'm not a big like zoodles gal or like cauliflower rice. It's just so sad. Like it's so sad. Like I can't I'm sorry. Like you're not fooling anybody. Stop pretending. Like I can't do it. So gross.
I definitely feel you. Yeah. You know, like I wouldn't do that either, except sometimes I just don't feel good and I have to listen to my body. So that's one of the reasons why I do those substitutes, just so I feel better. But I feel you. Like if I didn't have to, I love rice. So
oh my God, too. Rice is like my favorite thing. Even just like plain white rice. Like anytime I go to an Asian restaurant, whether it's Chinese, Japanese, Vietnamese, whatever it is, I always just like, as much as I love the food I'm eating, like the plain white rice is so good. Like, I don't know. It's because they make it obviously a million times better than I can make, you know, white rice at home. So I love it. I've always loved white rice so much, which is like, not the most nutritious thing in the world, but
Alexa, you're secretly Asian.
I literally am. Oh my God. I've like thrown, like when I was little, I would like throw tantrums if my mom tried to feed me brown rice. I was like, as you can tell, I'm a bit of a pain, but for better or for worse. So Tinger, tell me who inspires you, whether that be from like a culinary standpoint or a life standpoint. Who are some of your inspirations that you look up to?
Yeah, I think from like the culinary standpoint or like kind of the promotion of cultural diversity, I'm a big fan of Anthony Bourdain, you know, rest in peace. Like he really made a difference in terms of showcasing like the best and also a real version of like how people live day to day in different countries and different cities. And that made me want to continue to explore just by watching his shows. So he's definitely played a huge influence in what I do in promoting cultural diversity through food on my own page. Another person who I love watching too is Sunny from this YouTube channel called Best Ever Food Review Show. He also explores the world and shows like unique parts of the world that has like foods that you may not have even heard of. It's definitely not mainstream food, more localized food, sometimes street food, sometimes foods, you know, created by like tribal members of various regions of the world. So to me, that's very fascinating because I love to learn about food and culture. And then of course, my mom, she just she really was the one who like pushed me to try different types of food. She's very exploratory when it comes to that. My dad, he's open, not as open as my mom. My mom loves to try everything. But I think in terms of like humanity and how to treat people, my dad has been a huge role model for that. He's the type of person who's like, you know what, no matter where anyone is in life, treat everyone with respect, treat people with dignity. Everybody deserves to, you know, have at least those basics granted to them. So yeah, he's probably taught me how to be the best human being possible.
Oh my God, that's so cute. Your parents sound absolutely amazing. Like, what a good duo. It sounds like your dad's maybe a little pickier and probably gives your mom a hard time, but he sounds like such like a kind soul and like good person, and like they, how lucky to, you know, have those cultural influences and like have them, you know, bring you up in that way that opened your eyes and your heart and your stomach to, you know, all the best that's out there. So those are perfect inspirations. What a lovely answer.
Thank you.
Yes. So another random question. Tell me how often you grocery shop.
Oh, if I could, I could go grocery shopping every day. I love
it. Isn't it kind of fun?
Yeah, you just make, you know, you just go like discovering different products. I look to see what other people have in their carts to see if that's something I would be interested in. When I travel, I actually go to local grocery stores and I see the lay of the land. I see what products that are available. Actually, we'll buy olive oil. I'll buy wines. I'll buy spices, which is usually what I typically do, is I buy a lot of spices. They're easier to carry back with me. And then I'll recreate some of those dishes and I'll share some of those, like, you know, types of beverages with my friends when I would have dinner parties when I come back. Because at the end of the day, nobody needs another trinket. Nobody needs another, like, you know, keychain or shot glass. They don't want that. They want something delicious. At least that's what I tell myself. So
I bring back snacks. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, amen. And yeah, that... I signed me up. Like, yeah. That sounds perfect. Yeah, I don't need a shot glass. I don't need a coaster. Feed me.
Yeah, I would bring that back for like my coworkers and my friends. And so they love when I like travel because they're like, oh, what's Tinger going to bring back next?
Yes. What is some of the, like you said, you know, you were kind of talking about discovering new grocery store items and during your travels. What is like, are there a few things you've discovered that have like changed, that have made like a huge difference, that you're like, oh, I tried this, you know, Israeli blank that now I use on everything? Or is there any like big standouts from your travels that you use, or at least if you have access to them that you can use?
Yeah. I mean, when possible, I prefer to get like olive oil in like Europe or North Africa or the Middle East. I just feel that they don't have that type of food here available. What I'll also do is if I go to Italy, and this is probably more the exception, when I go to Italy or Europe, I'll actually bring back bread and dessert and pasta that's fresh. And
the bread stays good?
Oh, yeah. And I'll share that with my friends. Sometimes I'll freeze it. I think one of my favorite desserts I got was, it's those Portuguese egg tarts. I bought a dozen.
Oh, pastéis de nata?
Yes.
I know that because I'm Portuguese.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I kind of was like hoping you were going to say that because while I am Portuguese on my dad's side of the family, I really don't know that much about Portuguese cuisine. And I actually did a video on like discovering more about my Portuguese background. And I learned about pastéis de nata like just in the last year because I didn't know about it. So I was like, when you were talking about what's that Portuguese egg tart, I was like, oh, I'm hoping that's what you were going to ask because I just learned about those.
Yes.
So those hold that up well if you bring them back?
Not so well. And the thing is, I love these egg tarts so much, even more so than like the Chinese version or the Hong Kong version. I love these so much. I didn't want to share with anyone and I didn't know how to like keep them, you know, fresh for that long. So I would eat one every day, like really slowly. And then after a while it started to mold and I was so sad because like I said, I hate wasting food. And number two, like I went out of my way to go back to that like particular store in Lisbon to get it so I could bring it back to the States. And yeah, I mean, that was one of my favorite desserts.
Oh boy. Yeah, those are really, really good. Yeah, that's a bummer that they didn't last that long. I mean, I'm shocked they even lasted as long as they did. I would imagine those
those were like a pretty low shelf life, but that's what makes them good is that they're fresh.
Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, accidentally a few times I've actually brought back fruit from like Southeast Asia, which is really, really delicious there. And I'll like open up my bag. I'm like, what is this? And then I see like a half like crushed fruit. And I was like, no.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess it was worth a shot. Mm-hmm, you've totally inspired me to, you know, once it's safer, you know, I've been saying this to myself for a while, as I'm sure that we all have, you know, once we're, you know, traveling is more of a thing, just to kind of take advantage of it, because we kind of, you know, took that ability for granted before, but even just talking to you and has made me kind of, has given me that bug even more than I already had it of like, oh, I need to get out there. Even before, you know, 2020, I would say I hadn't been on like a good, like long, like international trip and a while. Like it was, I was due in 2020 and then 2020 hit. So it's been, I'm long overdue for a good trip. So you'll have to help me pick somewhere, because I feel like you're the most, probably the most well-traveled person I know. So congrats.
Thank you. Yeah.
A high accolade.
I was going to say the one thing I wish I could have brought back with me was my, one of my last trips I went on before, you know, the pandemic happened. It was to Norway, and I was doing a show there showcasing all of the regional foods for that particular time period, which is like late summer, early fall, I believe. And man, I had one of the best butters. I don't even like butter, but I had a butter that was so clear and so light that like you put it on your tongue and it literally just sinks into your pores and it's clean. There's no film. There's no like, you know, stickiness. It was so clean. And I was like, wow. I'm like, that's probably how butter is really supposed to taste like, unlike, you know, whatever you get at the grocery store. And
that
the cheese
amazing.
Also was really, yeah, the cheese was delicious. Like, and I tried milk for the first time from straight from a cow, like a cow's
How was
butter.
It? Was it kind of like warm?
Yeah, it was weird. It was a little warm and it was actually a little sweet. So, so it was actually, it tasted good. I'm not a big milk fan, but like, you know,
right,
it was
from
definitely
the udder,
worth
you gotta
trying.
Give it a try.
I know, that's how adventurous I was. And even in that region, I actually went diving for a sea urchin, and I picked it up from the ocean and I actually ate it in the water with like the sea urchin diver master.
Oh yeah. So did you have, it was like uni that you ate, or what part of it that was it that you
yes
how uni. Was it
yes It was really delicious. Seafood in that region of the world is so sweet because of the super frigid cold water that usually all of the seafood, like shrimp, you know, shellfish, like all of that is like very sweet. So it was definitely a treat to actually, you know how people say like, oh, I eat farm to table. This was literally like sea to my mouth.
Yeah. Table. Literally. Oh my God. Yeah. Cause like uni is such a delicacy. I'm not the biggest fan. It's definitely an acquired taste. I've tried, I've tried it many times. It's kind of slimy and, you know, I'm sure it was really good when you had it fresh, but when you have it, you know, at sushi restaurants here in the States, it can be a little like fishy. Like I'm sure they're getting good quality stuff, but it's, you definitely have to be have to acquire the taste for it. But I'm sure that was amazing. Like what a delicacy and like what a unique experience. My gosh.
Yeah.
Tinger.
Yeah. I wish I could bring all those things back.
Yeah. You've got me jealous. My goodness. So now I have maybe the hardest question for you.
Sure.
We're going to play a little game of F, Marry, Kill about food. So the three options are tacos, sushi, and pasta.
Okay, I would marry sushi.
Me too. No brainer.
Marry. Oh, wait, it was like sushi, pasta, and what was the other one?
Tacos.
Tacos. Marry tacos and then F pasta. Only
you said marry sushi.
Oh, sorry. Did I say marry? Yeah, marry sushi.
Kill pasta.
And then
F tacos. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a solid answer. I would definitely marry sushi myself. Pasta and tacos would be tough because what you're saying about the pasta hurting your stomach, I'm totally with you there, but it's so good. I would maybe F it because it's like an indulgence, like a, you know what I mean? Like, it's bad for you.
I love gnocchi. I think gnocchi is probably one of my favorite pastas.
Oh, and like fresh made, like from a real, you know, in-house. Like, ooh. Yes. Well, this is, if anybody listening to this isn't hungry, then I don't know what to tell you because I just ate and I'm like starving again. Like Tinger has got me really jonesing for like travels and delicious food. And I guess I'll just go back to eating my like dried fruit and almonds that I have here in the kitchen.
It's fine. I'm just drinking tea. I didn't even really eat all day yet. So.
Okay. Yeah. It's almost the weekend. So it's almost time for us to celebrate, you know, have some better, less, I don't know if you do the same thing as me, but during the week I kind of eat healthier and then on the weekends kind of go a little crazy. So we're getting close to me indulging a bit this weekend. So I'm excited about that. Well, was there anything else super important or burning that I did not ask you yet, Tinger?
I think you pretty much covered most of it. I guess I have a question for you. Are you going to come out to LA anytime soon?
I mean,
if you do, I love to show you around.
Literally, like, now I am.
And I know like a lot of the different restaurants, so, you know, we could go around and since we both have our, you know, food accounts, I'm more than happy to like, you know, show you, introduce you to different like restaurant friends and then we can just take pictures and eat and, you know, stuff our face silly. So
sounds like a dream. If you didn't have me convinced before, I'm convinced now. And I was pretty convinced before. So once it's like safe to travel, I am there. Like, I feel like, you know, summertime is going to be really wonderful. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed. So, yes, I will have to take you up on that 100%. Well, thank you so, so much, Tinger. This was so much fun. And I feel like I learned a lot about you and your travels. And it's just, you're always so fascinating to talk to. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Alexa.
Yay. So everybody listening, thank you so much for being here as well, for sticking around with us to learn more about the food and drink discovery platform that is the FeedFeed. Head to thefeedfeed.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at thefeedfeed. And don't forget to follow Tinger at Dash of Ting on Instagram as well and check out her blog. If you have a food story to tell or want us to interview a blogger, cookbook author, chef, or restaurateur who has helped you solve that question of what's for dinner, we would love your suggestions. Just send us a DM on Instagram. See you next time.
The FeedFeed is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradio.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from our listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.